Welcome to Fargo Talks Fargo, an unofficial podcast on the FX television show. Fargo Talks Fargo is hosted by me, Bill Lempe, and my buddy Sharpie. Sponsors for this season of Fargo Talks Fargo are TAG, celebrating Fargo and the Midwest community through t-shirts, art, and graphics. For more information, visit tagfargo.com. And Fargo Brewing Company's Wood Chipper, India Pale Ale, with its bold hop flavor and velvety body. Grab a pint or visit them online at fargobrewing.com. All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of Fargo Talks Fargo. We just last night finished Fargo, episode 6, Bury Dan's Ass. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That's Baradin's Ass. Or Baradin's Ass.
Let's not talk about your last Friday night.
Oh, okay, fine. Buridan's ass. I'm screwing it up. I guarantee somehow. Sharpie, since the hot dish, I'm assuming you're still about the same.
I'm about the same.
Right,
it
here.
Is what it is. I haven't left my chair.
We are fulfilling the other half of preseason Fargo Talks Fargo. Come back and talk about the real show after it aired. We had Joe Riley from grillingaddiction.com on last week. This year, we're super happy. This year, This week, we're so excited to have John Lamb back. John is a features writer for the Forum of Fargo Moorhead.
You're so excited. It's like I come back like a burp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're like my salami sandwich from this afternoon.
All right, where'd you have that salami sandwich? It doesn't matter.
It's great to have John.
It's a metaphor anyway, so.
Yes, it is.
But either way, it's good to have you back, John. Thanks for coming back on the show.
And it's been a fun show so far.
And you have been writing a little bit about it, and
you guys have been doing
video recaps with your coworker, Heidi.
Mm-hmm. Heidi Schaefer, my boss, yeah.
How have you been feeling about it so far?
I think, it is the most ambitious show I've seen in a long time, and it remains to be seen whether it will become one of the best shows because they're so ambitious. They have a lot of stuff to kind of explain or not explain, and it'll be really interesting to see we finished episode 6 last night. It'll be interesting to see the next 4 episodes. Do they try to explain some of the allusions, some of the... allusions with an A, but some of the metaphors, some of the things they've brought up, or do they just kind of, let things be? Or will the show wrap up with nice little tiny packages, or will it not?
Speaking of tiny packages, Sharpie.
I'm right here.
Here you are. So the opening, let's just get to it. Because I agree with John. There's a lot going on. There's going to be, man, if they put a bow on everything somehow, holy shit. Congrats to Caleb Hawley. Jeez. Keep mixing up the musician who's from this area with Noah Hawley, who writes.
You're good at that.
Yeah, I do that.
Yeah, so, of course, a lot of stuff is happening. It kind of started with last week's episode where things started to sort of tie up, and for good reason. They've got a lot of, I don't know how to put it, like a lot of debts to the viewers to sort of start resolving. Otherwise, you're going to just piss people off. Whether or not they're going to tie everything up, I don't know, because these people still need jobs, and they're probably hoping for a second season. So, at least in terms of the crew and the writer, I think we're going to see some things open-ended, but for sure, things are going to be starting to wrap up here pretty quickly, as we've seen.
Yeah, I think this episode moved pretty well as well.
It was a longer episode, right? It's about an hour and 15 minutes?
I think they all have been like that.
Oh, have they? Okay, yeah. It just seemed like maybe it was a little bit longer. Anyway.
But so this week's episode is Buridan's Ass, which is the French philosopher about the donkey standing in the middle of the road, equidistant from food and water, and the donkey is both thirsty and hungry and is completely torn by the decision and through indecision, never makes a decision, and dies. So that's the show title explanation. I'm not sure any of us have figured out where it ties, and we don't necessarily need to get into it, but I feel like we... have to cover that because we've been trying to cover that every week.
Well, clearly the show though is that they're setting up some issues or themes of free will versus choice and predestination,
and dealing with us, the viewers, at making our own choices about people.
Yes,
how do we feel about a lot of those things? And I at some point think that Don Chumph was a little bit of a donkey in his own regard.
You mean an ass?
An ass? Mm. Well, I mean, or whatever you want to call him, but.
A poor little mule.
Yeah. So Sharpie
Same
and I talked
Gus
on the
Grimley.
Hot
dish. I mean, Gus Grimley is,
adult.
A friggin' donkey. if you ask me. And he's definitely torn between lots of things. And I think it's putting him in a position where his outlook is a little bit grimly.
I would argue one thing about that is that Gus Grimley, I think, is pretty straightforward. His one sole purpose in life is to protect his daughter.
Yes, it's just he's...
That overrides he's got a his
history,
job.
He's got a long history of poor decision-making, but we can talk about that later.
I think it's all self... I think it's self-preservation. But anyway, let's go on.
So Sharpie was going to talk... Sharpie talked to us a little bit last night, and I'll let him pick up on this about the... we see the fish get prepared, and we are evidently in the King House Buffet on the corner of
Broadway
and 2nd.
Yep.
And Sharpie had some comments last night about mob bosses.
Yeah, so we're clearly in a local Fargo Chinese restaurant. but yeah, I was just commenting on the hot dish about how, like, why do mob bosses always have to be like these disgustingly fat, like, you know, somewhat inarticulate guys.
Like the Kingpin.
Say what?
Like the Kingpin.
Yeah, right. And I mean, it's like a very stereotypical mob boss. It didn't bother me at all. It was kind of fun, and maybe that's why. Maybe it's an easy thing to do, like an easy little treat for the viewer. But we definitely meet the leader, or we, you know, somewhat assumingly meet the leader of the Fargo Mafia gun runners.
He who has the grossest mouth noises while eating leads.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys alluded to it before, very much like Jabba the Hutt, but, you know, the mob boss is the heavy, right? That's the lead person.
Yeah. And so we've got some Aussie guy who's just kind of mouthy and loud and obnoxious, and we don't really know his story yet. I don't know if we will. But then the accountant kind of, in the corner, is really interesting to me because he just like never stops, you know, filling in the boss on the details of the business, and he's not bothered by anything, he's not flustered by anything. Even when the boss speaks, the accountant kind of just holds and then continues right where he left off. And if you kind of hear him, you can hear him talking about what sounds like credit card numbers that they've stolen. I think he mentioned something about 9,000 credit card numbers worth a credit limit of like $1 million, $1.1 million. So clearly they're like a crime syndicate, and this is like he's informing them on how the sides of each sides of the business are doing. And I thought that was kind of interesting, especially how he was just like not fluxed by anything.
One thing in this in that scene is that when you looked at it for people who are from Fargo, who are familiar with Fargo recent politics, the mob boss looks a lot like Denny Wallaker. And this his right-hand man, who's actually sitting on his left-hand side, looks a lot like
Brad Wimmer.
Well, I would actually say Pat Zavarol.
Oh my gosh,
who's a high ranker in the it's an interesting thing for Fargo people to watch.
He does have a little bit of the walrus in him.
Yeah. So we'll play a clip here about, because they get to talking about tracking, the Aussies talking about them tracking the guy, you know, numbers and wrench. That's where we actually hear their names mentioned in reality, like really for the first time by anyone in the story.
Yep.
And
which is interesting.
He says they're going to apprehend them, and we'll listen to this clip because shortly after that, this is what the boss has to say.
Not apprehend. Dead. Don't care extramarital. Don't care not related. Kill and be killed. Head in a bag. There's the message.
Of course, boss.
Yeah.
1900 units shipped by rail at a cost of 600 per...
And there's the accountant who just picks right back up.
Yeah.
So many by rail. And as his boss basically sucks the brain and eyeballs out of the head of a fish.
Right. That's what he does. Like, he's the boss.
I like that scene, but one thing I noticed, like right last night, is like if this is indeed supposed to be in Fargo, which I believe we're supposed to believe it is. Well, what Chinese restaurant still exists that isn't a buffet? That would clearly be a Chinese buffet.
I kind of wanted to bring that up too, and
I know where it is. It's on South University, and it's called Great Wall Chinese. They have no buffet, and their food is awesome.
There's nice no plug. Buffet, but I believe they don't have the decor like that.
They don't.
It's like a hospital cafeteria.
And if you're talking about
a delicious hospital cafeteria.
Still great food.
If you're talking about a Fargo mob boss, I guarantee you he ain't eating fish. He's going to be eating, you know, red beef, well done, and then everything else on the plate would be white and creamy.
What if it's river carp? Maybe river carp. Maybe river carp, I think.
Could be.
Maybe.
Could be.
I've never even had river carp.
Oh, you've never been to Fargo.
Yeah. That's true. So another interesting thing that you touched on, Bill, was that this was the first time we heard the names Wrench and Numbers, which kind of begs the question in my mind is that, like, where did these originate from then? Did that come from, like, an internal, like, part of the crew? Or did that, like, leak from the show? Like, how did we start coming up with those names? I'd like to know who coined those first. It had to have been somebody inside on the inside. But just a little side note. I thought it piqued my curiosity.
I mean, somebody did it, obviously.
Somebody did it.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know if we're able to find that out. I don't think they're going to tie that one up with a bow in any way, shape, or form.
Probably not.
So eventually we end up cutting to, we cut to Chump's house. And I posted on our Facebook page wondering, you know, wonder what Chump's been up to for a while.
Just sitting in the closet. Isn't it the R. Kelly? Has anybody, like, tied this into the R. Kelly song? I'm in the closet.
I just thought it was great that he finally comes out and he talks about he has some trust issues. He's like, I'm having trust issues. Hey, what's in the bags?
Yeah. Yeah, why is there paper on the window? Poor dumb Don Chump.
Oh, God, you just...
And at what point do we start feeling sorry for him?
I don't know.
Have we already?
I think the minute he asked about the paper on the windows, and I noticed the paper on the windows,
he was doomed last week. And it's
I didn't.
You
didn't think
doomed.
He was going to get a screw in the head?
No, I didn't. I thought he was going to be a scapegoat for the crime, not the distraction for the next crime. I didn't realize that. I'll say that. That's what I was thinking.
I kind of thought his days were numbered.
I mean, I think we all knew his days were numbered from the second he was on the screen.
But I thought somehow maybe the fire hydrant would track it down and track him, you know, once, because he kind of relieved Lauren of his services last week, remember? And so if he finally does whatever and then maybe the hydrant gets all pissed and goes looking into it, he'll track it all back to Don Chump and then he'll pay for it, not Lauren Melvo. That's what I was thinking. But doesn't matter because that's done and Don gets all Vader on the voice vocoder thing and Lauren's obviously very disapproving of that and slaps it out of his hands. I think that scene was pretty straightforward as a setup of Don's going to die.
The writing was on the walls. I actually thought there was going to be the blood. I thought the blood would be more literally on Lauren Malvo's hands.
Yeah. And we cut to Milos Stavros' house and he's having flashbacks about the money and the phone call comes in. And I think this is the moment where Don is being used as a tool. As a tool for Lauren just about the last time.
Yeah, clearly.
So I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, with Chump, don't you agree, Sharpie?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. It was all playing out originally to what we were originally thinking was that Lauren was putting him into every position where it was all going to look like Chump was the chump, and he was the guy behind all this. But then, as we see in this episode, he made it look like that to the viewers, but eventually he was just using him and losing him, basically. Now he's just going to completely cut his ties with Chump, cut Chump's ties, and away they're going to go. And he's spent. Are we still there? God damn.
Hold on. I'm still here. I turned it off because you're...
All right. My video's off.
I don't know. All right, let's try this. Let's keep going. What were we talking about?
Okay, Chump. So definitely it appeared as if it was all kind of going to what we were speculating towards. What we were speculating was that Lauren was leading Chump into being the scapegoat for the whole master plan. But as we saw everything unfold, it turns out that that wasn't entirely the case. He's just kind of brushing Chump off his shoulder and moving on, and that's it. So he's obviously there's a bigger plan in play. And Chump wasn't as important as we thought he might be. We gave him a little too much credit for what he was.
I don't know if we gave him too much credit so much as we thought he was going to be useful longer to somebody.
Right. I guess that's a better way to put it.
Well, here's one of his last acts of usefulness, and here's the phone call that they make to Stavros.
He was born in a field and raised in the woods, and he had nothing. In the winter, the boy would freeze, and in the summer, he would boil. He knew the name of every stinging insect. At night, he would look at the lights in the houses, and he would want.
Why was he outside, and they in? Why was he so hungry, and they fed? It should be me, he said. And out of the darkness, the wolves came. Whispering. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Chumph doesn't have a clue what's
Gustafson
going on.
Gustafson parking garage. I know.
And there you have it. Gustafson parking garage, as we talked about in the hot dish last night. Nice tie back to Wayne.
Wade. Wade Gustafson.
No Gene, no money.
No. Kristen Redwood's dad for the locals.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing there too is that all of a sudden at the very end, the wolves. Lauren Malvo really loves wolves.
That's back again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's very very much on a canine kind of kick.
I think he sees himself as a you know, the predator, the hunter, the maker of putting things right in his world as he sees fit.
Do you think he's trying to put things right, or is he just trying to create chaos? I would argue he is strictly trying to create chaos.
I don't know. Sometimes I think he's doing what he feels is right. I mean, and it's brutal. His idea of the world is really brutal, and I think he's...
You think he's got a code like that?
I think it's his lack of code that's part of the problem, but...
Do you think
even people without a code have something that they slightly follow?
You think he even cares about the money? I just can't picture this guy like giving two shits about money at this point.
That's a good question.
I don't picture him like skipping along with $1 million and going to some beach in Mexico drinking Mai Tais. I just don't really see that happening with Lauren Malvo.
Yeah, they haven't really explained anything about his life that there's anything that he wants in his life. I mean, Don Chumph wants this to start a Turkish bath. He wants the money to start a Turkish bath. What does Lauren Malvo want? I would argue it's still just to, you know, mix shit up.
I still haven't figured out who he's supposed to be to this whole, like, grand story. Is he, like, some sort of satanic, you know, tempter or some sort of evil, devilish thing that is constantly putting things in motion to make sadness happen? And
you know, more and more the names Lauren Malvo, you know, you think of Lauren Malvo, maybe Lone Malvo, Malevolent, I don't know, but Lone Wolf, you know, something like that. I don't know, but... Yeah, he's certainly he's got no ties to anybody.
Yeah. And all Don can say is, you know, what's going on? And he's like, give me that duffel and I'll tell you.
Yeah, so why you got all the, what's with all the duct tape in here? Clock.
It poor felt a lot Don, like there was a moment where he's like, give me that duffel and I'll tell you. And I immediately thought of Dumb and Dumber.
There's a lot of Dumb and Dumber in this episode.
Why don't you finish your burger? I'll tell you.
Yeah. And at that point too, when he clocks him, we really know that the end is very near for poor dumb Don Chumph.
That's right.
Yeah. So we eventually get to Duluth. We eventually get to Duluth again, and Molly's on her way to see Gus. And as Matt and I have started discussing
that quick drive,
we've started talking about the fact that it's almost the downside of being from here. Because if I was living in California and I didn't open a map, none of this would matter. So I've started to decide that it doesn't matter anymore. Like, we've made our peace. We've talked about it as a joke and it's been fun. But now it's like, every time she drives, I'm not going to be like, that would take 3.5 hours. I guess I just don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah. We've never teared on any other show.
Yeah.
Right. It does bear that there is this kind of comic world element to Fargo, in which you can also, police officers will take their car on, apparently without telling their superiors, will take their car, be dressed up in uniform, and drive to another town. And granted, she may be doing research, maybe there for work, but there's the whole comically bad detective work that goes on within the various police departments. And then, as we see later in the show, there's the absolute neglect of care in hospitals. But, you know,
that seems about right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a TV show and we hope somebody comes and picks him up.
But that is every medical thing ever. I mean, that's happened on ER. It probably happened on flipping Quincy back in the day. And then somewhere in an episode of MASH, there's a guy who gets stuffed in the hallway and next thing you know, Klinger walks away with him. I don't know. I'm just saying that's like classic TV.
But in 2006, I don't expect the Invisible Man to be your roommate. A guy dressed head to toe in bandages.
I think that was Kevin Bacon. Know.
It probably was.
Was it?
Yeah.
Mr. Creech was played by Kevin Bacon.
That's right.
Well, either way, Molly and Gus have their chat.
Awkward.
About the... Yeah, super awkward doorway talk and low-level sexual tension. And the little subtle scene where Molly, when he walks away, fixes his hair and talks about the Jewish fella and that they know the car is owned by Phoenix Farms. So I don't think there's anything special at play with that. It's pretty straightforward, don't you agree?
I completely agree.
Now we can get on to what really matters to John Lamb.
Yeah.
This situation with the Bemidji Hospital.
Where I was started just being...
Poor Mr. Creech.
Yes.
And in the background, Metallica's One plays the entire time.
So, Mr.
Good call.
Right?
Good call.
Was it?
No.
I was like, how did I miss that?
No, there's no fucking Metallica in this episode at all.
Because we all agree if they were going to play Metallica, they should play Creeping Death. I bet that's the final track on the final show.
Yeah, John's got a thing about this.
Hey,
anyway, go for it. Tell him, John. Tell him what you want to hear.
I want to hear Creeping Death by Metallica because there's obviously all of these. They're talking about the Egyptian plagues that we've been visited by, what, four of them? Four of the ten? Yeah, and a couple of them even in this episode. So.
Maybe 410 is the right number. Remember the 410 lounge?
Yes.
Ugh, the former strip club. That would be the
410
Fargo.
Is a significant day down in Colorado. Is it not, Sharpie?
No, 420. Come on.
Oh, God.
Ah, John, smoke more pot.
Yeah. I know. Tell me about it.
Get together.
Ah, I'm such a lame narc.
So
anyway.
Creech and Lester are like bunk buddies, except yeah. Creech is... Mumbles just enough to let you know that he's not dead, but not enough to let you
Where's
know.
Where's the name
he's...
Creech come from? You know, talk about Numbers and Wrench. I'd like to know Creech.
Numbers, Wrench, Grimley, like all the names are very
They're kind of child book names.
Yep.
Child storybook names.
I like that Creech fables. Is in such bad shape, yet he drove to the hospital himself, clearly.
Right, exactly. Good call.
Just parked right there and wandered in. And,
yeah. Yeah.
And now
and
he's
then,
in
yeah,
like
and
a,
then he just
puts I already his, know what happened.
Puts his car keys in his pocket. And you've got Lester over there. Lester's got IVs. Creech, who's obviously so badly maimed.
You know what
he's
happened?
He's wrapped head to toe.
I've got the story.
He's got nothing.
I've got the backstory.
Okay.
Oh, you do?
Yep. Creech was out walking in the snow and was coming to the hospital, and on his way in, he slipped and fell and smashed his face into the ground horribly.
So he got into a car and drove?
No. That's just on the way. He was feeling a little faint, thought he'd go to the doctor on the way in, right before Storm 2000. Yeah, he wipes out on the way in, smashes his face. Now he's got to go to radiology and get that thing scanned and figured out.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I thought I just had a headache. There you go. I just created a backstory for Mr. Creech.
Great.
Thank
Albeit
you, Bill.
Albeit a shitty one.
The creature
Lester,
creature.
Though, is finally kind of awake and, hey, what's up? And the nurse and he have a quick conversation where he finally realizes, oh, shit.
He's busted.
I'm busted. There's a cop outside the door, and the polite nurse won't let anything happen. I mean, it's not good.
Right. He's told that it's not a matter of her to let him go. It's the police.
Yeah, and he's trying to figure out what to do, and eventually Chaz shows up.
Chaz.
And this scene happens, and this is the official clip show. Yeah. This is
the breakup.
Yep, here it is.
Lester, it's me.
Oh, geez, I'm just waking up.
What did you do?
When?
Come on, Lester. There's a deputy outside the door, for Pete's sake.
I just cut my hand on some rusty nail. Not sure how that involves local law enforcement.
They said you were there when the police chief got murdered.
Well, heck, I think I'd remember that. Unless, I don't know, with a head injury, maybe.
You're lying.
Says who?
That cop, the female, says you're a suspect.
Suspect of what?
Murder? For Pearl, the chief? Even Sam S.
That is crazy, is what that is. I'm the victim. Me.
He plays this off really well, don't you guys think? Where he just, I mean, there's like no hesitation in the guy. And I'm creeping ahead because there's another part I wanted to play within this, but we don't want to play the whole thing. But he really just plays this back to Chaz as like, no, it's, you're crazy. Why would you ever think that?
My favorite part of that little scene, and it's kind of like the turning point of Lester on Chaz, and where Lester is trying to get Chaz to just blame him for the murder. And he's like, come on, say it. Come on, say it. Like, yeah. He's like, now, Lester's now like egging himself on to build up this hatred for his own brother, because you can see right there, like, his gears are turning. Like, this is it. Like, all I need to do is hate this guy, and I can start to pin things on him.
Yeah. Well, and he's got reason enough in a minute. I mean,
yeah.
We find out I actually thought it was the most. Right. I thought it was the heartbreaking point of the show.
Yeah, and so I'll play the rest of this little clip a few seconds ahead here.
I'm done. There's something wrong with you, Lester. There's something missing. You're not right in the world,
Chaz.
Yeah, I mean, that's got a bite.
And you know, in this part, in this episode, true, we'll see throughout the episode, the family really does have a family connections and family trying to protection, and that the family bond is a real big theme in this episode. We saw it earlier when Gus sends his, we don't see it, but he tells Molly that he sent his daughter away for her own protection.
Yeah.
Because he's afraid that
Lauren creeping around.
Exactly. And then Milos has already sent his son Dimitri away with Walt, his bodyguard. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really even seen any kind of affection between Milos and Dimitri yet, but he obviously cares enough to get him away. So we're seeing that in this episode, which is kind of the first time, other than Molly and her father, mm-hmm. that we're seeing kind of family connections, family bonds,
yeah.
and really kind of the way to them.
And it's that complete like slice in that, though, where those bonds are all happening and Lester and Chaz completely split theirs, like Pangea, just break the thing
cleaving
apart.
Cleaving apart.
And Lester just seems to have an idea, and he goes through his whole escape and swaps spots with Creech.
Yep.
Mr. Creature. Creech. Yeah, Creature.
Creech. Could be Creech.
And the most excellently placed Audi endorsement ever, right?
Well, but again, I want to start pointing out that the hospital where they push him down a hall, they push Lester has exchanged body wrap basically with Creech and gotten into his bed. They push him down a hall and then they leave him there. Maybe that happens in hospitals, like you said, at least in ER and other medical dramas it has. But it's also the darkest hospital hall I've seen since the first episode of Walking Dead. The most darkened and desolate hospital hall.
I can actually speak to that.
Okay.
I have done some work for a local hospital here for something completely unrelated to being there. And there was an entire wing, just down the hall. And all of a sudden it's like empty. And it's just, they don't have enough of those beds. And they literally had a hallway of like 15 to 20 rooms. All the lights were off. And all that's coming in is the daylight. And it looks exactly like that.
Yeah. I've shot a short film in a hospital before. And we've actually, they have those areas specifically for disasters.
Ah. True. Yeah, yeah. There's like backup areas.
So there's like entire wings, at least in Fargo, that are completely dark and shut down just in case something catastrophic happened.
Well, there you go.
And so that worked out for the project I was working on. We were shooting a short film, so we had an entire hospital wing to ourselves in a fully functioning hospital, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, you can not see people for a while.
However, though, if you were somebody who was going taken down to what X-rays,
you're not
going to
be shoved in the overflow wing.
Yeah, you push them down there, and then you abandon them for a couple of minutes. You come back, and the person's gone, and you check the chart, and then you kind of do a walking tour, and then we find out a little bit later.
Well, I feel like she had the thing where later she was like, "Well, geez, like." Oh, shit, I lost a patient. Again, she's the Gus Grimley of nurses.
Because what happened to Lester?
Yeah, well, what happens?
What happens to Lester?
Nobody checked on Lester.
No.
But he's okay. He's just got bad hands. I think this is a great time to take our first sponsor break, and I'll... Sharpie, do you want to take the phone, or you want me to, or what do you want
to
do?
Sure, I can take it.
All right, say it, buddy.
We'd like to give a big thanks... to one of our sponsors, Fargo Brewing Company, and their beer, Woodchipper IPA. Woodchipper IPA.
John and I are drinking some Fargo beer right now.
I am drinking a Woodchipper IPA right now. Still on my Easter reserve here. Woodchipper IPA is a classic American IPA that showcases an aromatic, bold hop flavor with a velvety body. Oats and Horizon hops provide sleek, velvety body and balanced bitterness, while 2 pounds per barrel of dry hopping offer initial waves of citrus and pine. I was just reading the can there.
I know you were. I know you were. And here, now I'll translate that for the rest of the audience.
No.
Do you want me to? No?
Okay, yeah, sure. Go for it. Translate.
Woodchipper India Pale Ale from Fargo Brewing Company is a really tasty beverage. You should get one. It is fantastic. I have been a craft beer drinker for a long time, at least since Sharpie was in kindergarten. And that's true. I can honestly say that this beer is just phenomenal. I love it. I love picking it up. I actually love all their beers. And I think it's so good.
It's pretty well balanced. It's
very smooth and drinkable.
It does have quite a few malt in it for the craft brewers out there. It's 70 IBU, so it's not overly bitter, but it's still got a little bit of that bite.
Yes.
Pretty good. But Fargo Brewing Company has been kind enough to sponsor the entire season of the show, one of the sponsors anyway, and without them, we couldn't be doing the show. So that is super awesome of them. And we do have a secret code word for this week.
Yes, we forgot to mention that on the hot dish last night. And I was in Fargo Brewing's tap room before the show tonight. And Jared said, "Hey, what's the password this week?" And I was like, "Oh, shit, we forgot about that last night." So we've got one.
Yes, this week's secret password. To get yourself,
that's just John having gas, don't worry about that.
To get yourself a dollar off of a pint at the brewery, if you're in the Fargo area and you want to stop by the brewery, you should do it. They offer tours. You can get all kinds of merchandise along with the beer. They have kegs. They have six-packs. They have growlers.
Growlers. Stickers, hats. It's all there.
Yeah. So if you say the secret word, secret code word of the week, which is...
Here, I got it.
The password is fish.
So if you go in there and say fish, say, "Hey, I got the password. It's fish." They'll give you a dollar off your beer. Here's the real kicker. You go in there. They open up at 4 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, I believe. Tuesday through Friday, and have happy hour from 4 to 6. And with the exception of the Giga Hops that's on tap right now, which is a little more expensive, tap beers are $5 a piece regularly. They're $4 during happy hour. So if you say fish for your beer during happy hour, you get a $3 pint.
You'd be a fool not to.
You get a $3 pint of beer.
straight
$3 for a
pint. If you are in our local area, Fargo, North Dakota, get your ass over there and get a beer for $3. What are you, stupid?
That's a steal.
God, do it. If you're not, come to Fargo.
If you don't do that, you're as dumb as Don Chump.
Yeah, don't be a chump.
Or Gus Grimley.
Yeah, don't Grimley this thing. Get your ass over there, say fish, and get a beer, and next week we'll have another password. We're going to keep doing every week to force you to at least figure out where to fast forward to and find the password.
That's right.
Or you could follow us on Facebook or Twitter.
That's right.
There you have it. We did it. We did an ad. Our ads are getting more scatterbrained as the season goes on.
That's okay. That keeps them more fun. And less addy. Ad-like.
I have a friend named Brett who really does love hearing us say the word velvety body.
Velvety,
I don't know if that's a thing.
Body.
Body.
I don't know where velvety. We came up with that.
I don't know. Who writes this stuff? Matt Charpentier probably does.
I actually do. I actually, the beer descriptions are a combination of myself and the brewers. We kind of have a little powwow and write that out. I don't think velvety body was my coinage, but
it works.
I do think it works.
I like to pour that velvety body liquid right into my mouth.
I have a velvety body.
All right, let's bring her up. Let's rein this puppy in. So
back
we go. So speaking of pulling
to the show,
pulling a Grimley, Gus in the car with Molly back in Duluth says he had a pellet in his hand this whole time. Oh, good old Gus.
Yeah, Gus is pretty dumb bulb.
I will say, up until the very end, Molly and Gus' scenes are very kind of
restrained.
Restrained, and I mean, they go to the grocery store, and they have some interesting interactions there, and it's slightly amusing, where she's like, are we telling people about the bugs? Well, it's like you're yelling it, you know?
Right. Again, kind of a good Coen Brothers.
Very good.
Yeah, kind of a nod to the Coen Brothers there.
But nothing really happens of any major dissection for
nothing's
us.
Learned. Yeah, no,
they
nothing.
Are police. They go to the one of the
Phoenix Farms.
Yeah, they go to the grocery store and they just go to the checkout farm. Aisle instead of just like demanding to speak.
They asked for a manager, but the managers aren't in because
maybe Phoenix Farms doesn't have a courtesy counter like Hornbacher's here.
No, they don't.
It was that awkward moment while we were just waiting for Milos Stavros to return the loudspeaker phone call was fantastic.
Yes. Just like the only thing that didn't happen was Girl from Ipanema didn't play.
Right. But Milos Stavros wasn't there because he was.
Hey, boom. Stavros is at a parking ramp.
Yeah, he's at the Gustafson parking ramp.
Very, very reminiscent of the movie. I thought about him driving up that circular thing over the night, Sharpie. And maybe I did say this last night in the hot dish, but I thought it was interesting that he was driving in this circle, which is very parking rampy, but they didn't have to show that. But I just thought he's been spinning his wheels going in circles for a while. Like he can't get
That's
it.
That's right.
You know what I mean? He's just totally Adderalled out.
It's sort of a symbol of his arc throughout this entire episode. You know, he has this sort of realization. He's going to take the money back and then, you know, we'll get to the end, but he kind of,
yeah,
it seems like he did go in a big circle just within these, maybe the last, maybe this like arc
snake
of three
eating its tail
episodes. Yeah.
And then he has some flashbacks, and he ends up calling the fire hydrant and says to bring his kid home and, you know, go tell
the, by the fire hydrant, you mean, I think the character's name
Semenko?
Is Walt.
Semenko. Yeah. I like saying fire hydrant though. Same way I like saying frozen panties as much as I can on this show.
All right.
And he changes his mind. Tells Semenko to bring Dmitri home, and Dmitri, in his usual form, comes stumbling out of the cabin with a toothbrush in his mouth or something.
He's kind of...
Is that my dad?
Yeah, he's an idiot too. The thing that killed me about this scene is that he calls them at a cabin, and as you call him, Fire Hydrant or Walter Semenko or whatever his name, whatever you want to call him.
Walter Sobchak?
He answers, and this is a rural, rustic cabin. This is not a Detroit Lakes lake cabin. This is a rural
cabin. No, this
cabin.
Is like where Rocky trains
right.
for fighting
Russians. And what is Walt wearing? He is like wearing...
He's wearing... long johns. Yeah, like old school long johns with buttons.
Exactly, buttons. And he's like leaning against the post like it's some kind of like a Viagra commercial or something like that.
Yeah.
It was kind of a comical, like, okay, I get it. You're rural. I get it. Okay. Oh,
I thought it was a statement about Semenko just being who he is now that he's away.
He's cutting loose, you think?
Yeah, that's it. Do you think? Don't you ever notice he's always uptight? Wasn't he like a former football player? I'm screwing this up now. What did he used to do? Remember they mentioned what he did before?
Yeah, I think he was some sort of All-American.
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe anyway, that's his little bungalow. Maybe.
Do you remember the fire hydrant
away.
Thing, though, John? That he was wearing the red jacket in one of those first episodes. He met Lauren, and Lauren says, "What's with the fire hydrant?"
Oh, yeah.
That's why I call him the fire hydrant. Okay. I wasn't sure. So
I call him Red Rocket.
Red Rocket! Parking ramp. Stavros makes a different play, goes to leave, and has a total Walter.
Carl Showalter?
Carl Showalter. Jesus. You're messing this up, John. Messing this up.
I do that.
You had Walter. You had Big Lebowski on the mind.
Yes, I do.
So yeah, he's pulling out and like, yeah, I said that.
That was Red Rocket
pulling out is accurate in this because he's backing out of the plan, which is he's not going to sit up there and he's not going to wait for the money exchange. He's changed his mind and we don't know
because
exactly
he's seen
what
the
he's
movie Fargo. He doesn't want to get shot in the face.
He knows.
So he drives down and he's trying to get out.
He has a very Fargo Cohen-esque interaction with the parking attendant.
Please.
I changed my mind. I decided. God, he told me. He has different plans.
God told you not to park here?
No. I know what I have to do now. I didn't before.
Well, sir, I gotta. It's $2 for the first 30 minutes, so...
Son, you go to church?
Yes, sir.
Get open the goddamn gate. Your Lord demands it.
That's a pretty good moment.
That is actually... I'm going to just go ahead and say that is the line of the show for me. Open the gates. Open the goddamn gate. Your Lord demands it. And I also will say that was one of the best... That accent, I felt that was home... That just sounded normal to me. It didn't sound like anyone talking like we talk. It sounded just like average. And I'm like, holy shit, Oliver Platt just nailed it right there.
And he also has that sort of same, his flow of speech is just like an old man who's trying to like tell you something, but he's not giving you half of the story.
He's got a lot of things going on in his head, and he can't
spit
them all
out. When
your
dad rushes in, he's like, "You didn't shovel the sidewalk. You didn't shovel the sidewalk. Gotta go." And you're like, "What? Start over. Tell me what's going on."
Oh,
I changed my mind. I know what I got to do now. Like, this kid has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. He's not, and Stavros isn't going to give him the rest of the story. It did sound exactly like a lot of, you know, middle-aged old men conversations that I've heard before.
Yeah. So we have more conversation back to Molly and Gus and their mildly romantic drama.
As they're driving along beauteous Duluth Skyway.
Oh, God, actually, Duluth is...
Duluth's got some big buildings. Duluth is a gorgeous town.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing I'm amazed about this, and again, as you guys point out, to somebody who's from the rest of the country and not so much actually caring about being true to what it is, there's no mention of a lake, which is what Duluth is built on, and no mention of the hills or...
One of the largest lakes.
Yeah, Lake
pretty
Superior.
Great.
It's a pretty great lake. It's
like bigger than a few... You could fit a few states in that lake.
Yeah, they seem to be driving into the heart of a much bigger landlocked metropolitan area. But, good for them. They're
I'll
having
say
a nice
this.
Little drive.
I'll say this. I would rather have them treat us as if we're more metropolitan in terms of our cityscapes than we are, because we just got our new driver's license that came out this week.
Oh, really?
Sorry, this is a total aside, and there's horses and buffalo on it. And
what?
I'm just like, you know, if you can figure out how to make us look more like we're just people on the prairie living here with the horses and the buffalo, don't worry about it. And it's just gross and disgusting. Sorry to whoever designed it, but it is.
Wait, there, is it a new license plate or a new...
No. New driver's license. Sorry. And so if you go look up the new New York driver's license, it's like beautiful. It looks like European money and all this kind of like glorious design. But anyway, I hate our new driver's licenses.
Oh my God. That is god awful.
You just looked it up, didn't you? It up.
You know, they weren't that bad before. In fact, I thought they were...
No, they've always been bad. It hasn't been good since like the mid-90s.
I think they're a lot better than a lot of states that I've seen. They're better. Old ones, I should say, are way better than Colorado's. Colorado's are disgusting.
John Lamb's face says it all right now. Mm-hmm. He's just like, what the hell just happened?
I don't care. We can talk about this.
Anyway, I'm just I'm glad that somebody's like depicting us. I'm just glad somebody's depicting us as more than a pitchfork fondue. There you go.
Surprised there's no like oil rigs on there. I mean, we all got more oil than we have horses.
Well, it's
come
like
on.
Yeah, half the picture is just oil spilled on the ground, and the other like top quarter is just burned off methane and gas that we flare off. Mm-hmm. There you go. Ask me how I feel about that.
If you work in whatever committee decided to put this together, then
you're still talking about the license.
Go fuck yourself. Like, figure it out. Hire a professional.
Oh, they did. That's the sad part. I do think this conversation Molly and Gus have in the car coming back to their drive through the trees and skyscrapers of Duluth that you can see rolling across on the windshield, which is what we're talking about. I have a little bit of this Bury Dan's ass.
Stop saying the two-faced. Stop telling me to bury Dan's ass.
The two-faced conversation.
Okay.
That Gus talks about. And I just think that's another place where there's a this or that thing and you're in the middle of it. It's very two-faced. How can you tell a lie, but you want, you know. And then he also talks about the rabid dog, which I think you could think about in terms of...
He says a rabid dog, you know, a rabid dog is rabid. And that's that. But he has...
Well, I'm just thinking about the way Lorne fashions himself a wolf.
A predator,
and now Gus is speaking to that same thing, and he's like, it's not a wolf. You know, he doesn't say it's not a wolf, but he's saying, no, this is a broken part of animal culture, and it needs to be, you know,
bullet
behind the ear.
Well, I mean, but it's also that Gus just really does not understand that's kind of the way the world is. I think to me that was him saying like, I just don't get it. I don't understand why people have to be a certain way. And Molly,
she just feels sorry for him.
Well, and you know that in that part where Molly in Molly's talk there, that's where I really saw for one of the first times the Frances McDormand, where Marge mm-hmm. Gunderson has at the end of the movie.
We talked about this two episodes ago. Yeah, keep going.
She's got the guy in the back of the seat. Yeah. I can't remember his name. It was the
Gear
in the back of the seat. And she just doesn't understand this. Why would you do this? Why? And it's kind of and actually on that one, she says, it's a nice day. You know,
says, why would you do that? And here you are. It's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day. Oddly enough here, they're talking that earlier, Molly says that this could be the storm of the century that they're heading into.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, that was like,
that's
also
one of my favorite scenes though. So I'm glad you brought that up again. It's not just me.
And I think that's a real key point in the movie Fargo. And I think it's kind of a key point here too, where we're seeing Molly become more and more that lead character, where Molly is more and more, maybe not necessarily an authority, but maybe she's becoming more and more the person who's talking about who can actually relate to what's going on. Gus clearly can't. This is beyond Gus's ability.
Yeah, Gus is just...
Gus can't fathom
He's not Don Chumph. He's not Molly. He's somewhere in between.
Yeah, I would say he's closer to Don Chumph.
60-40?
Yeah, 60-40 is about right.
Speaking of 60-40, we're back at the Chumph house.
Yeah.
But thanks for bringing that scene up, because yeah, we talked earlier about it, and I mean, I know John maybe hasn't caught every episode because he's doing his own coverage, so I can't expect him to hear everything we talk about. But
you guys keep pumping out episodes, so you guys are good.
But we talked about that scene where, just to put a little button in this real quick, that scene where... Lauren gets picked up by Gus a little early, and they're having that conversation from the very same perspective. You remember when he picked him up and
when he actually picked him up?
Yeah, and yeah. And then that's when he got all like, and he's like, "Shut up, just shut up."
Because and he says, "This is what you'll say in an hour. This is a mistake."
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, but we cut back to the Chump House, and Don is so obviously screwed.
We know that this is the end now.
Yeah. He's asking, the 60-40 split's not going to happen his way. And this is where I was thinking just really lightly about Don being Buridan's ass. And he's not necessarily the donkey stuck in the road who can't make his own decision. In a weird way, I was just thinking lightly about he's had his decision process removed from him, but still has the mental capacity to want to do one or the other. And he can't back out of the deal, and he can't shoot Lorne, right?
Because Don is now,
he's taped up to some kind of an exercise machine, and so he can't save himself, and he can't call for help. He can't do one or the other, and it's going to be the end of him because he's stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
Granted, the decision's not his the same way that Donkey was stuck in his decision, but
and it also shows this is a little bit of a side note, but shows a little bit how dumb he is because right in front of Don,
Lorne pumps the shells out.
Empties the shells out of the shotgun.
I don't know. I think that would still be a natural thing. And as Lorne says later,
like you're just hoping.
Well, here we're going to play that clip because it's the official clip show. But you know, I think this is also a scene. I guess we're going to talk about the clip. Let me just play the clip because everyone who's watched the show will know where it's at.
Part two is, have you ever had Turkish delight? It's disgusting.
Oh, no shells, no shells, buddy.
That's okay. I'd be insulted if you didn't try.
That's a great line. You know what I keep thinking about that is it's like a step up in Lauren's like hatred for anybody he doesn't care about.
Is it a hatred or just a willful, total, just doesn't really...
He's already going to kill the guy and he knows it. And yet he has to just crush his dream.
I think he kind of wants that game. I think he wants to be challenged.
Well, Don Chump is not.
Don Chump is not going to do it. No.
I just mean like this is him just soul crushing somebody.
Yeah.
Because he to say, like, have you ever even had Turkish delight? You know, it's disgusting. And yeah. I mean, the poor guy is just...
Duct taped and with his shotgun in his hand.
Duct taped to a shitty treadmill.
He knows he's got to realize that he's doomed.
Yeah. And then, well, yeah, you all know what happens next.
Lorne opens up firing on the... But this is the thing. Okay, so as hateful as Lorne is, he has people in his sight. He doesn't shoot them. Instead, he shoots at a car. Why is that?
I still think because he's a predator, he picks and chooses. Predators pick game and things that are advantageous to them, but they don't necessarily eat sparrows.
So what's Don Chump?
Don Chump is just...
a poor, stupid little rabbit.
He's not eating him. He's just a member of his pack that's obedient to him for a long time, and after he's not needed, he's beat up and discarded and not in the...
Lauren, so what's the difference between... Male.
Okay, we don't want to talk too much about lone man in a wolf pack, and next thing you know...
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I'm just saying, I think that I don't think he has morals. I think he just doesn't want to waste his time with more than he needs. He doesn't see the waste in it. Possibly.
Okay.
I don't know. Just saying.
I have no answers. I just think it's an interesting thing. And he could be totally chaotic evil and just start killing people at random. But as somebody points out, he kills regularly, but he's not a serial killer.
You don't think? Yeah, I suppose he's... I don't know.
What defines a serial
killer? He's got no problem taking a life, but he's not setting out to do it. It's not his goal. He's not setting out to kill people, and he's not following a pattern or anything like that. But it's just that he has no problems with it. It's just, I think it's his chaotic world.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we go to Lester's house. And
not Lester's house. Chaz's house.
No, Lester's.
Next, no, you're right. You're
we
right.
go to Lester's house because he's freed himself from the hospital moment, you know. And he goes to look for the hammer, which, by the way, Nice play behind the
smart poster. Smart Lester.
Somebody has seen Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. right. A potential nod to Shawshank. I didn't think
about
that.
So he grabs the hammer, much bigger than Andy Dufresne's rock hammer.
A little bit. And a little bit bloodier.
He scores himself a photo and a pair of panties, which, by the way, I'm just going to go
grandma
on there.
Panties. And say,
Pearl. Not so sexy. Come on, girl.
No.
Give a shit. I'm sure Lester puts on, Lester's boxers don't say anything about
him. We don't want to put those images
maybe
in
if
our
you
mind.
Maybe if you were a better lover, I'd buy you a better pair of panties. So Lester eventually leaves there and goes to
Chaz.
To Chaz's house.
Chaz's house.
Chaz's
house.
So he
too many wood chippers in the old belly.
velvety body. He plants
God
the hammer.
God told you to drink the wood chippers?
God told me to drink the wood chipper. Don't you know? He puts the photo and the panties in the gun cabinet. The totally like even they're not white, they're not pink, they're not red.
Slightly
like
brown.
You're stuck on the panties. I'm stuck on the gun cabinet. I thought for sure this was the place he was gonna go in, he was gonna grab the guns and he was gonna leave.
We don't know that. Maybe that is yet to come.
I think we know that.
But he didn't do it then.
He's going to revisit the gun cabinet.
This is what I was thinking. I was thinking he was going to escape. But instead, he goes in, he places these items in the gun cabinet, and he closes the door.
Oh, yeah. I saw that a little bit, and I was just like, ooh, shit. And then he closes that door, and he sees the good old picture of Gordo.
Yeah.
So what he's trying to do...
Played by Little Spencer, who I think follows us on the Twitter, so shout out to Spencer. Thanks for following us, and I think his dad does too. But he sees him, and I think,
figure out. So he set the trap, but he hasn't set the bait for the trap. You know what I mean? He's set Chaz's trap, but how are people going to be led to it? And so then the photo of Gordo like sparks a little something.
Yeah. And he goes upstairs, and turns out Lester is an evil piece of shit.
Lester is cold, man.
He's
just been cut off from his own
family. That's what
happens
when you get poor treatment in a hospital where people don't care about
you. He's been shut out from
his
own family, and yet what does he do? He's out for revenge. There's no doubt about it. There's no way else to describe it.
Chaz said that shit to him, though. That's some cold stuff. So he plants the revolver in Gordo's backpack, and also shout out to the rooster on Chaz's desk from the
Gordo's desk. Yeah, there's
the rooster prints was an episode.
There's
correct?
A lot of there's a lot of little symbolism, a lot of little things going on here that bear watching.
Yeah,
if you're watching it for the second time,
yeah, watch the background for that stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
So he puts the, and we should say of course unloaded. Everybody watching that he does really. I think that's his moment, a little bit of humanity left.
His Lorne moment,
his Lorne Malvo code.
Yeah, that you know he's not Gordo's not going to get gunned down. Unlike poor dumb Don Chum.
Oh, Don gets gunned down.
Well.
So he's clearly planting that gun right. Am I on the same page as you guys? He's planting that gun so that Gordo hopefully
gets busted at school,
and there's a little investigation where they find the panties and the hammer.
Yeah,
the panty hammer.
And that's my theory. Yeah, that's what's gonna happen.
Because I don't think they're gonna try pin that on little Gordo.
So then,
are they?
No. So then, how about that awkwardness as Lester's leaving the house and gets busted by Gordo, who sees Lester trying to escape, and they both just stare at each other.
Yeah.
No words exchanged.
Nothing exchanged.
Well,
he hasn't said anything yet.
No.
Sharpie and I did talk last night about, was it episode one or two?
No, he does. He does. He talks to his mom in the kitchen.
In the kitchen, but is there, do you remember, was it episode one, Sharpie, after Pearl died, or was it episode two when Lester is talking over at Chaz's house and Gordo's on the stairs with a little toy gun or something, and he's going, and he's like, but in the scene, it's like pointed perfectly at Lester.
I think you're nailing that one. I think you were onto something there. You said that was going to foreshadow something. Now Gordo has a gun.
Gordo's got a gun. Gordo's got a gun.
What is he gonna do?
Oh my god, sorry, we just went there. So
Lester was arrested.
Okay, so we think something's gonna go on there, and boom, we're gonna take a break. And we're gonna take a break because we have to tell you about our second sponsor. So just sit down, finish the wood chipper you should have in your hand right now. And if you don't have one, you're making plans to get one. And you know what you need to go with that wood chipper is some fantastic threads. You need a shirt. You don't want to just sit there drinking.
You gotta have a shirt when you're drinking a beer.
That's deep south. We're Midwest here. So you need to go to tagfargo.com. That's tagfargo.com. And Tag is one of our sponsors along with Fargo Brewing Company this season. And we could not be happier to have them with us. And they have been fantastic for us. If you go there, they've got all sorts of great t-shirts. They got some mugs. They have some beer glasses and a bunch of things like that. You need to go there and check some of these out because there's some sales going on some great shirts right now. And if you go there and pick one of those out and use the offer code, promo code Fargo, you'll save 15% on your order. How can you beat that?
Can't beat it.
No. They've got a great Fargo shirt that has some bison on it. It says Fargo. There's a Fargo Theater shirt that we've talked about many times. There's another one that says I'd frack that. That's a load of crop. There's a couple shirts that say love with the word Minnesota in them. And they've got new colors for spring that are in that are fantastic for you ladies out there.
Check it out.
Check it
out. I love Tag. That's cool.
Yeah.
Great work, guys.
I'm like scrolling through these right now.
And it's all made by members of the community, so that's cool too.
Yeah. I'm trying to have one of those moments where I'm like, I'm going to click on that.
Click on that. Click on it all.
But some of these, I mean, there's some shirts on sale right now for $5.
Yeah. Don't.
Like, how can you not buy that?
And then you get 15%
off of that. I'm like, I'm going to buy like 10 of these. I don't even know what to do with myself. But there's also a great shirt from the Bacon and Beer Festival we had.
There is? They're selling those?
And pint glasses. Fargo, where the beer is always cold. So you need to buy yourself some pint glasses from tagfargo.com. Use the promo code Fargo at checkout. And when they get there, you got to get somebody if you're not from the area. If you're from the area, you go pick up some wood chipper and you pour it into that glass. And if you're not from the area, you call someone from the area and you have them drive it and you meet them halfway because you need some wood chipper.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Go to tagfargo.com. We couldn't do it without their help. We're so excited that Jade has signed on to help us make this show happen. So
Jade, who
if you want to help us,
owns Tag.
Jade, who owns Tag. And if you guys going and visiting these sites and checking these guys out and entering these promo codes and getting a dollar off a beer, that's what helps us by letting them know that you're listening to the show and we think our sponsors matter and we hope that you'll help us show that.
Mm-hmm. So let's do it. And let's
do it.
Let's get our velvety bodies together, Bill.
And less exciting than that. Sharpie, tell us a little bit about Molly and Gus going for coffee.
No. I was somewhere else in the notes there. Are you still there?
What?
Hello?
Oh, shit. I thought I was going to do that. I'm going to have to mark that. John went to the bathroom, and I had to go let him back in, and I tried to get you talking so I could go open my door.
Oh.
My bad. Sorry.
I had no idea what was going on. You got to warn me of that shit.
I thought, well, I was trying, but he was like at the door. Screw it. We're leaving that in the show.
That's fine.
I think it'll be phenomenal. People just hear you talking to yourself. Coffee time with Molly and Gus, I said.
Yeah. So you caught me totally off guard because I was like reading other notes and you were like, coffee time. And I was like, what?
Well, once you buy your coffee mug from Tag that says love with a Minnesota logo in it, then you'll have something for coffee time with Molly and Gus.
Love Fargo.
Yes.
Okay, so Gus and Molly are meeting in the coffee shop.
Yeah.
And
they're doing something.
So clearly Gus has just talked to Molly he's given Molly the story of the Jewish guy, the mitzvah van guy.
No, that was earlier. That was in the hallway. You're thinking, no, he's talking about when he wanted to be a... No, he wanted to be a mailman. Oh, I'm sorry, the parable. The crappy parable.
The parable. Yeah, that's what I was
getting to. The suicide parable.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he just like volunteer at a charity or something?
Gus
like
Grimley, horrible date.
That is a fact. Feel,
Molly's expectations must be low.
Well, it's probably not a lot in Bemidji to pull from.
Yeah, I suppose. Whoever you meet at Keith Carradine's cafe.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're Keith either wearing Carradine's. Bright orange or camouflage.
Keith
for one.
Carradine's boozy boozy shake cafe.
And God. Every bartender I know hates making.
Do you like cheeseburgers
booze
or
the,
yeah. cheeseburgers?
Oh gosh.
Or so, yeah, we have anyway, a ham
sorry,
special.
Sorry, I stand corrected. You were right. They were talking about the shitty parable. And I'm not saying shit. I mean, like, it's depressing.
And
it turns out Gus wants
like,
to be a mailman.
Yeah, I just saw that movie with Will Smith there. 7 pounds? And Gus Grimley's like, yeah, probably, because I'm a doofus.
Yeah.
They should go to blend it together.
So it turns out Gus can't even make career choices well.
He wanted to be a mailman. So there we find, like, oh, he just wanted to be this innocent little mailman, and be a part of the community, and not be an officer, because an officer isn't part of the community.
No. Why would you? It's more important to get your check in the mail and your junk mail than it is to, like, save a dog or
right.
solve
it's like
murder.
Bringing puppies back to people. Like, come on. You are just as good as a mailman. Like, have some, like, get your chin up there, Grimley.
How many times have we said to Gus Grimley, sack up, buddy.
Sack up, buddy.
That was one thing that what Gus was saying, that like he wanted to be a mailman. I'm like, so now he is a dog catcher for the Duluth PD. And he actually wanted to be the job where dogs most often chase. You know, that particular Gus's life makes no sense. Gus's life makes no sense.
It's the yin and yang. He wanted to be the chasee, not the chaser.
And by this time, shit's going crazy behind the scenes because
the shooting
has started.
The cops pass by on the way to Don Chump's house.
The chump.
And again, this is where this is nitpicking. I don't believe for a second that a police department would pull up directly in front of a house where there was a questionable shooting right outside. They would pull up,
set a perimeter.
Yeah, set a perimeter, and then also they go in within a matter of minutes.
And you have to have a bullhorn. There's no
right.
There's no technology in Duluth to allow you to find out the phone number.
Phone number? No,
at
you would
an
never. It's not like Mayberry PD. Despite what Gus Grimley acts, you can't call Sarah and have her hook you up with 123 Hopeless Lane.
Hopeless Lane.
Yeah.
123 was the address on the door later.
123 Chump Boulevard.
No, Chump's address was like 806 or 809 or something.
We haven't seen a 613 in a long time.
Oh, it's there. We're just not catching it because I've stopped writing down license plate numbers because you all think I'm crazy.
You numerologists.
I just love that it goes by and they're sitting there having their like talk about Gus's failed career decisions and the police department's whipping by and they're like, I wonder what that's about.
And again, okay, granted, maybe this is their day off, but it's their day off. They're both driving around in the squad car.
They're clearly working on the case, though.
They're clearly working on the case.
They're both in uniform.
Yet neither one of them brings their radio. When have you ever seen a cop who's not without a radio?
This one time? No,
okay. It's one time in a porno?
I was going to talk about the time my cousin's girlfriend, now wife, Rachel, and I were sitting, talk about small town North Dakota. We're sitting at the kitchen table at my uncle's drinking some Coke and rum. And we watched the police, one of the only police officers in a very small town of like 1800 people walk out of the house. Drinking a bottle of beer in uniform, whips it in his garbage, gets in the cruiser and pulls away. And she looks at me and she's just like, did that just fucking happen? And I'm like, holy shit. And I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like,
and what we're led to from Duluth, from the pictures in the TV show Fargo, is that Duluth is about 200 sizes that big.
It's like
200 times that big.
It's like Brooklyn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without the hipsters.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I suppose.
I bet you they don't even have a food truck, you know.
It's Brooklyn.
Well, they got that mitzvah tank.
Right? Yeah, they got the mitzvah tank. Yeah. Who needs a...
Get some of those mitzvah balls.
I mean, let's be honest. The people in Bemidji and Duluth were wearing neon orange way before the hipsters in Brooklyn.
Yeah, don't be such a nudnik. Okay, so we go to the Chump House. Let's start the long haul home.
Police arrive at the Chump House. Yes. Waco, Duluth, exactly.
You get on the bullhorn. Schmitty there is all like, come out with your hands up, you see?
Right. And when they
let's
don't...
Let's not do this like Sioux Falls now.
And when they don't, within a minute, he sends them in.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would, you know, maybe knock on the door. But evidently... Nobody has noticed Lauren Malvo out front rigging up a tripwire that goes to an assault weapon.
Right.
Whatever, that's fine. I'm okay because I love the show.
And again, this is where the show is so cartoony. Things always work and it's but it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Lauren's got the, you know, he's a techie guy. He's got the hookup, you know, the man guy probably provided him with a tripwire.
He's calling from a landline, taping on cassettes.
That's technology, is it not?
It is out of date technology. Mm-hmm. I believe
it out of date, or is it just out of date in terms of surveillance? Like he's using out of date technology to stay ahead of surveillance.
Either way, the tripwire goes off, and their response is
blow them all to hell.
Turn this shit into rubble.
Yeah, just Swiss cheese that motherfucker. Because there's no possible chance of hostages.
This is where ascertained that there's maybe one or two people in the house. But no babies. Definitely not babies.
And
in
however,
house.
While Don Chump is maybe 10 feet away from the front door, unscathed. Got no place to move. The house is being blown to pot and the shots are coming through the front door. We find out later. Don Chump unhit.
Okay, I'm just going to say this.
Remarkable.
So we'll cut to the chase because we got to get through the snowstorm scene too. That music, the whole thing, we've made fun of Chump all season so far, and we love his accent, we love his bronzer, we love his 6-inch marble. Mm-hmm. We love so many things about him now. We love and hate him and whatever, and when he, I was just... I
hope you're going to.
I felt like shit when that guy
I want to say
shot.
That Glenn Howerton, I love you, but comedy is definitely your thing because that death scene was one of the worst things I've ever seen in terms of like, I've never
what?
Seen.
Really?
No, I've
I didn't
never,
think it was that bad.
I'm talking about his body reaction was cartoonic.
Well, that's a director's thing.
No, I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, there's not much he can do with his body.
He was flopping around like a fish on a hot dock, just like uncontrollably.
He's getting shot. He's getting shot.
I know,
shot.
But it could be done better than that. Come on. I mean, he's just like, he's like doing like some sort of funky chicken dance kind of thing.
Again, I got to believe after 1 second, he's probably taken at least 4 or 5 bullets. I'm assuming he's dead.
Right.
So,
yeah, but if this was any other drama, he'd still have enough breath
and
left
maybe
in
I'm
him
not
to,
giving
to
him
hold somebody's hand
the duct tape,
and
so.
To say something.
And
like,
say something like, Turkish delight.
6-inch marble. Oh, I just, there you know you what? Go. I'm going to, here you go. I've got a glass in front of me. I'm just going to.
Yeah, let's pour one out for Don Chump. Let's pour one out for Don Chump.
Here, you can't hear it. Let's hold on.
We lost our guy there.
Here, we'll pour one out for Don Chump. Hope you didn't have to go to the bathroom. That was me pouring one out for Don Chump. So
Don Chump, dead. Don Chump, dead during the blizzard.
Who
of,
dead next?
Of 2006.
Stormwatch, 2006.
Stormwatch.
Which no one remember the storm. They'll remember the day that there was the shootout in
Duluth. But, well, not only one shootout.
Many.
At least two.
So... Lauren's driving away. He seems pretty satisfied with himself. And next thing you know, holy shit, Numbers and Wrench catch up to him. And I don't know how they did it, but doesn't matter.
They box him in. Pretty great driving maneuvering there.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Guns come out blazing. The boys come out blazing. The Fargo Syndicate comes out. They're gunning down Lauren Malvo.
I like the pace of it.
I loved how wrench just busted out of that car and just immediately started shooting.
Yes, that's what I mean. Like, I love the pacing of it.
There was no question there.
Yeah, they went from kind of the...
Because Lauren's too busy looking ahead. You know what I mean? He's looking forward.
They went from the classical Requiem type music for background for when Don Jump gets killed to now they've got a real driving drum beat. It's pretty great.
I love it.
It's pretty great. So yeah, and then they open up fire on the car. But where's Lorne Malvo? He escapes once again. Lorne Malvo gets away.
Slithered away.
Sneaky, sneaky snake.
Slithers away.
Spider.
Is he a snake?
He's a spider.
Is he a snake?
He's a deer.
Is he a deer? Is he a wolf?
He's Charlotte.
Molly and Gus have now
tying back to Charlotte's web.
Wilbur. Molly and Gus are now also on the scene too, as this is all taking place. And
it's World War
Gus
III.
Gus is just definitely having a daddy moment. When your daughter runs into the street, you're like, "Honey, no, come back.
We should wait for backup." Is what he says.
Pretty intense.
Yeah.
We don't even need to talk about the effects, right? Do we?
It wasn't a realistic looking blizzard. I like the fact that it was that they tried to portray a blizzard, but
yeah,
not entirely a.
We have to wait. Hold on. Are you there, Sharpie?
I'm right here.
Where did you go?
Coming up behind you, caressing that velvety body.
When did we lose you?
Just keep going.
Just keep going. Oh, okay. I don't even know what we're talking about. We're talking about the storm. I'm not going to worry. Gus being
fatherly.
I'm just not going to worry about the effects of the scene because I think it's really hard. I think it would be really hard to create a realistic snowstorm.
And again,
that you don't have.
And again, as you guys have pointed out, they're not making this TV show for those of us in the region who can comment on what is authentic.
If
that's what Blizzard looks like to somebody in Los Angeles, to the far more people who are watching in Los Angeles, then hats off to them. I did think that they got the kind of the confusion, the fact that that's why they put it in a blizzard, is that there's a sense of confusion. You don't know. You can't.
And it really is like that at times.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
The whiteout on the interstate, though,
is absolutely the worst. The way, like, the wind is moving one way and snow seems to be apparently moving in its own direction and doing different things. And that's the way it is. And it can be that way in town when you're in when you're walking down the street and there's buildings, even in downtown Fargo, I mean, you catch a crosswind coming through a street and it's just like a wall of snow and shit. But
yeah,
if you're in downtown, pro tip, don't take the alleys if you think you're going to
get
protected by wind.
So Lorne cuts himself and sets a trap. Wrench falls for it. And I thought it was very telling that he gets stabbed, but he's not like super deadly stabbed yet. And
no, it, that's like torture stab.
That was Lorne putting pressure on his pain the same way he put pressure on Lester's pain in jail.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
These guys
are professionals.
That was no shit karma for me. I was like, oh, damn, he's going to do that. And guess what? After two or three times touching that, he didn't say, oh, I'm going to throw up. I'm going to barf. But he coughed it up and said, you know, he's like, who? And he was like, Fargo. And that was okay. And the minute that happens, it's just a... And in the midst of all this, we don't know where Numbers is. Lauren's got a gun, a knife.
Automatic weapon.
Numbers has a gun, and there are two muzzle flashes, which I think appeared more...
Well, we don't know where Wrench is.
And you hear Wrench, Molly... Yeah. But you hear Molly say...
Stop police or something. And there's two shots.
She identifies herself as I want to point out, as Molly is a good police person, she identifies herself. Shortly after that,
Gus is just like, who is that?
Idiot Gus.
Yeah.
Fires blankly, cannot make out who he sees, and instead he shoots.
Yeah, I'm doing it here.
Gus and the Blizzard. I want to point out, too, that he's blinking, and that's a real key thing, because if in a blizzard, you have snow coming at you a lot.
Yeah, that happens.
That's real.
So here we go.
It's the confusion.
Please, please, officer. Halt!
Never identifies himself, just says halt. All right, so what has happened here is that, spoiler,
well,
Gus has shot Molly.
Well, okay, so that's open for debate.
I've read a lot of people who are like, please tell me she's not dead. And here's the other thing. If she is dead, the show is in a little bit of weird or trouble. That, I mean, I'm not saying they have to. I'm just saying she's the strongest female character on the show.
She is the only female character on the show.
Yeah.
Well, the only regular female character.
Regular that's been in every
episode. She's the only regular
that's been
female
in every
character.
Episode. There's been others. I mean, Kate Walsh was strong in her role.
Mm-hmm. One time.
Two times. We had a lot of hope for Lester getting laid with her after that whole thing.
Yeah,
do you think she's going to be back?
Ida Thurman though has quite a tie to her, as we saw in the last
great
episode
character.
Where she
that's
said
a great character.
She's
don't
just,
tell me, just tell me.
Yeah, she's like, just tell me you're going to take care of it.
And, don't give me details.
Those two had a pretty serious like laser beam understanding without having to have too many conversations, but. There's a lot of bumbling assholes around Molly, and if she's dead, Jesus, I'm sorry, this show's a little bit fucked up.
Well, and okay, so the total pace that the show has been going, it's been going at a relatively fast pace. I believe right now, six episodes in, I think we're only maybe about a week plus away from the actual incidents, from the beginning of the show.
Yeah, quite
that's
fast.
Correct.
Things are moving pretty fast. So
yeah, this whole thing is about a week long.
Yeah, so if nothing else, Molly has at least been knocked unconscious. Even if she is not, a bullet has not actually broken her skin, and she's not suffered any major injuries, she's at least knocked unconscious. Police, I believe, probably police procedure would be that she would be on some kind of rest or a day off, and she would get some time off.
Uh-huh.
So it could be possible that she bounces right back and gets back into the chase. But, however, the other thing, too, is to keep in mind, Gus is already on a short leash at work, and now he has...
Gus, the dog guy on a short leash at work.
I chose that specifically. And he's in trouble at work. He is just, if nothing else, he is just fired into, he's fired at something he didn't.
He's arrested the wrong person, according to them.
He doesn't know what he's shooting at.
He doesn't know who he's shooting at.
And he's shooting into a city street without having clear identification of what he's shooting at or why he should be shooting. I mean, at the very least, he will be reprimanded. At the most part, he would be suspended. He would have his gun taken away, which would probably be a good thing for everybody in Duluth if Gus Grimley was relieved of his duty. I think the guy's giving all policemen a bad name. I would guess that every police officer.
Why do you hate Tom Hanks' son?
I believe I'm gonna still stick with this. I believe he was in town. I believe he was out at TNT.
I don't.
Okay, we'll have to.
I
find
disagree
out
with
later.
That.
We'll find out when we get him on the show.
Let's do that. Okay. Molly's down.
So you would think that would be the end of the show. A lot of us were thinking like, oh wow, the show's
here come
over.
The credits, yeah.
Right.
So Gus shoots Molly. We think the show is over.
Right.
And blammo, holy cow, there's Stavros returning all the money, feeling good. I mean, he might as well have just put some Earth, Wind, Fire on the radio.
Instead, it's something religious.
And Dimitri and Semenko are driving home, too. The storm seems to apparently be letting up in their areas.
At one point, Dimitri looks to, they're driving through. It looks like crap.
Which,
they drive
the way,
through like almost like a curtain.
Storm of the century tends to have only seemed to have lasted for about 40 minutes. That
so,
was my
well,
problem.
Well,
hey,
least,
that's accurate.
But they're driving maybe even from closer to Duluth. We don't know if this was actually in Bemidji. But anyway, so they're driving through and Dimitri turns to...
Semenko.
Fire hydrant Denko and says, hey, let there be light. And then of course everybody's thinking like, oh no, something bad's gonna happen.
So long and thanks for the fish.
Yeah. So they start getting pelted by fish from heaven.
Fish.
Big fish, not sunfish,
nobody
not
had
perch,
a, nobody
nothing
had a,
like that.
Nobody had a basket. They weren't feeding the multitudes
it's like
of
eel
hungry
pout.
People. I don't know what those
eel
fish were.
Crying from heaven. They were massive. I think they were, well, was it carp in the beginning of the show? Or
I don't remember.
Was it koi?
Well, no, it was not koi.
No, in the beginning of the show, that looked like black sea bass.
Sharpie and I had the comment last night that we thought we were having like a PTA moment. or a Paul Thomas Anderson moment.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
From Magnolia, right?
Yep. Not Parent Teachers Association.
Not the Parent Teachers Association, my bad.
We're not tight with them yet.
But it happens, they spin out, and guess what? So sad, too bad. Dimitri's dead, Stavros comes upon the accident, and that's it. And we cut back to Lester, and this is the one that got me. I had no idea Lester was going to sneak back into the hospital.
I didn't either.
I thought he was going to get away. I thought that was his getaway.
That was a good move. His getaway. Good move. That's a good Lorne move.
Yeah, exactly. So there we are, and we're left with the smiling asshole in his bed. His Walter White moment, as some had mentioned in a few things. And
that's what Lester is now, the smiling asshole.
So I don't know.
He's that evil. He thinks that he's beaten it.
Yeah, he thinks he's won, he's still. Yeah, he just thinks he's too smart. Anyway, I think we got to touch on Who Dead Next really fast. So, Sharpie, who's your Who Dead Next?
Oh, jeez. Ah, jeez.
Ah, jeez.
Who Dead Next? Well, put me on the spot here. I'm going to go with Bill Oswalt.
Okay. Ooh, wow, another police chief.
All right, John Lamb.
I think that they realize the Fargo Syndicate has to send in somebody else. They're going to send in the Australian, and I think the Australian's going to get axed.
Oh, damn, that's a good one.
The Australian's going to get axed up in Duluth.
Okay. I'm going to go with Wrench.
Now, Wrench or Numbers?
Wrench.
I think we may have confused these people during the show.
Because Wrench. Numbers is
Wrench
dead.
Wrench being the mute.
Wrench being the mute, yes.
Yes.
I think he may actually already be dead if maybe Molly shot him. We don't know who fired the weapon. We don't know.
So does that count then if he did get shot and got dead?
Well, he ain't dead until someone tells us he's dead. So
I think that's kind of the great thing about this particular episode is that they normally tease, of course, to next week's episode. This time there's so many untied things. There's so many unknown things. It was smart of them not to do that because the only thing they could really show would be Gus Grimley's face for about 30 seconds as he looks really anguished about what had actually happened.
I'm going to change my vote. Can I change my vote?
Yes. Go ahead. Yes, knock yourself out.
I'm going to go with Bo Monk.
Ooh.
Man we haven't seen in a while.
Yes, that's right. We haven't seen him for a while.
And he's given us a bad taste in his mouth, in our mouths.
Ooh, another one could be Chaz.
No.
Let's not forget Chaz.
I don't know what I'm going to do. Chaz, or we also have to remember that, there's still an outstanding policy on Hess. Who knows who is paying for that?
Yeah.
And maybe they're going to call to collect on that.
Well, and clearly, I do believe that we're going to get Lorne Malvo going after the Grimleys. And I think Greta Grimley is going to become more of a main character in these last four episodes.
Oh, okay.
God, you know what? We've just totally ascertained right now. We don't know shit.
Right.
We've also kind of declared that.
2 hours of it. Two hours didn't prove that to you.
Noah Hawley has.
He's got us all guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Who Dead Next is like the worst segment ever because.
Yeah. I suppose.
We go in like tidal waves of bodies and then go for,
What about Keith Carradine as Luce Oliverson?
We haven't even met Keith and Peele. You just said Keith. Key and Peele yet.
No, we haven't.
And I'm trying to decide if they're going to come from the Syndicate or are they going to be from the ATF or are they going to be, because a shooting like that might bring out somebody else.
You would think automatic weapons involved in two shootings in one city. Yeah.
I hope they play the only two black guys in Duluth.
Well, I just think that here's the bottom line is I feel the farther we're getting into this, I feel like there was things we had a grasp on that we're slowly losing touch with, not in a bad way, meaning I feel like they're writing it well, that we just don't know. There's like now that these pieces have lined up.
We were heavily into the plagues for a while, and that's sort of like untied itself and kind of unraveled. And
now we're into some unknowns, I think.
That's right.
I feel like there's a lot coming up, and I'm looking at show titles, and I know Carmela from FX Fargo had sent me some stuff to consider, and I was just like, Jesus Christ. I was like, holy shit, I don't even know how to process that yet, because now, in light of even this, I don't know what to do. But all I can say is that was a great episode. I thought it was. I don't mind the slower moving or the less, nobody got hit in the head.
They made up for the body count, the lack of body count in the last couple episodes.
Yes, they did. So, I'm just going to go ahead and say a thanks to our sponsors, tag Fargo.com and FargoBrewing.com for helping make this happen. And a big thanks to John Lamb for coming on the episode.
I want to say thanks to Fargo Brewing because we've had to pour out a lot of beer for some real special people who got off this week. Yeah. Adam Goldberg's character numbers.
God, I just want to dance.
Great job, Adam.
Dad, Don Chump. We miss those guys.
Don Chump. Great job, Glenn.
Stay strong, guys.
And Dimitri.
Dimitri.
We never really got to know you.
I mean, there was so much Dimitri, knowledge we didn't even know he had. He's the one who figured out the crickets thing.
He was the one who was on to things.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Well, there it is, folks. So another episode of Fargo Talks Fargo is wrapping up. Sharpie, until next week, my buddy.
Looking forward to it.
See you guys later.
All right.
All right, later.